Ice cold beer!
Popcorn, peanuts, Cracker Jack.
I know what the big deal about Cracker Jack is. Did you ever go and buy a pack of Cracker Jack thinking you'd get a prize and find no prize in the box?
Today, I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of the earth.
To the ball game, take me out to the crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back. We'll root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame. 1, 2, 3 strikes you out at the old ball game.
Right, Vivaldi's spring, because it's spring training's just around
like
the corner.
4 days away?
Next week. Welcome to the Ben Shuckies here on 101.5 UMFM. I'm also playing this to cool Brian off. I'm Michael Ells, joined in the dugout by my pal Brian Svensson. No Zook today on the phone, but I think maybe this is more appropriate for Brian.
Yeah, I'm mad. I'm real upset, Mike. I'm real upset. I'm very upset. Do you want me to just lay in here?
Mookie Betts, BS trade.
So crazy.
All right. I know you're itching.
You
texted me Tuesday when the news got announced, and I happened to... it's funny because there was no story on The Athletic at that point when you texted me, and I'm like, what? And so then I had to go to ESPN to find out the details. And for the Twins to be involved was kind of an amusing little addition, although that may be the thing that eventually tanks this.
Yeah, so we should probably lay it out, right?
So, 3-team trade.
Yeah.
The Red Sox shop Mookie Betts, probably one of the top 5 players in baseball currently.
I would say the second. He's the second best.
You think he's number 2?
He's been
Trout?
The second best player. He's the non-best Michael Trout player for the past 6 years. Since he came in the league, he is the best player not named Mike Trout.
Positional player.
No. Period.
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 You'd take him over Scherzer?
Yeah, I would.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, sure. Unquestionably one of the top 5,
yeah.
Arguably the number 2 behind Mike Trout. And so the Red Sox trade him and David Price.
Who is still a good pitcher, by the way.
To the Dodgers. In exchange for Alex Verdugo, who, I mean, ostensibly is what, their 5th outfielder?
I think he was probably going to get a lot of time in center field this
year.
You
think he was going to get more time?
Yeah, because I think they were planning on moving Bellinger to right and not playing Jock a lot. But anyways, it doesn't really matter.
I think, and then...
Verdugo's also an awful human being, but that's a different point entirely.
Okay, I don't know much about his off-field antics, so I'll have to look into that. But then the Twins get involved with this. They send their top pitching prospect, Bristol Gretterall, to the Red Sox in exchange for the Dodgers sending Kenta Maeda.
Right.
And so far as I've read, there's also implications in terms of the Red Sox eating some of David Price's remaining salary.
Yeah, it's not been said how much, but the qualifier for it is significant cash going from the Red Sox to the Dodgers.
So he was owed about $94 million.
So you're trading
remaining on his contract.
So okay. So
I know it's like, yeah, I know. There's lots to unpack.
You're the Red Sox, and you're trading away the second best player in baseball, as well as a still good pitcher. Like a
number 3.
A slightly above league average pitcher. Yes, on the downside. Yes, he's been frustrating. Yes, he's been injured. But this is still a guy that has pitched and has shown the propensity to be able to pitch out of the bullpen, be a swing man, which is something that Dodgers really like.
Mm-hmm.
You're trading away the second best player in baseball and still a good player in baseball and eating half of that pitcher's salary in order to get no top 100 prospects, no top 50 prospects.
Right now,
you're getting back an outfielder who is projected to be slightly above league average for the remainder of his career with severe makeup issues. And a guy who projects to be a relief pitcher, granted a fairly good relief pitcher, who's got injury concerns. Just so you can duck a $14 million luxury tax payment. You're doing this while you are currently the third most profitable franchise in baseball. The franchise in baseball that is worth the third most amount of money. Being owned by the third richest sports conglomerate on the planet. This is including soccer teams as well. Your organization, the Fenway Sports Group, is worth $6.6 billion, with a B, dollars. The amount of money you'd have to pay on a tax for Mookie Betts, again, $14 million this year, which is, and you make like $500 million a year. What are you doing? I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the last time I checked, in order to avoid antitrust monopoly laws, sports have been granted a pretty hefty antitrust law that allows them to operate as a monopoly.
Protection
from this sort of thing. And the reason why they have this is because they are seen as so woven into the fabric of public and being an entertainment industry that's so deeply woven into community and American civilization that they're granted these because they are the reason behind it is so that the owners are supposed to operate these sports teams as if they were in the fans' best interest. I'm not sure. I'm convinced that trading away the second best player in baseball so that a multi-billion dollar owner can duck a $14 million luxury tax is in the fans' best interest. I don't know. I could be wrong.
So
this is ridiculous.
I'm going to have to get like a blood pressure machine installed in the booth for you just so we can keep track on how high. And maybe we can figure out what thing sets you off the most over the course of the season. things have obviously, like, there's been a lot of digital ink spilled since the Tuesday announcement of this trade.
Because the only media that seems to think it's a good idea is the Boston Globe. Who's in the pockets?
Well, and this is the thing, right? We're going to... How soon do we get the, like, Mookie Betts didn't hustle character assassination?
Didn't want to be in Boston.
From WEEI and from the Globe. Mark Carrig wrote a great piece on The Athletic yesterday under the headline, "Baseball's big business, but the sport shouldn't feel like the sole domain of businessmen." And your discussion of the, you know, baseball kind of getting away with this because they've woven themselves into the tapestry of America is it an argument that he kind of blends in. But the thing that I wanted to highlight is people, like particularly Boston sports fans and Boston media, excusing this blatant attempt to...
It's a salary dump.
Get rid of salary and get under the luxury tax threshold.
It's a salary dump.
That there is no way you trade a player of Betts caliber alone, let alone with another like serviceable piece, for what you got back for just money matters. This is a very wealthy organization.
Yep.
There is like no point being a sports franchise or owning a sports franchise if you don't intend to put some sort of like reasonable team on the field. And
I'll tell that to Derek Jeter.
And I mean, there. This is the thing, right? That there are owners across the board who have a problem with, you know, clearly using this to cash them checks. So you know, the thing that I flagged, though, was he said, you know, no one buys a movie ticket only to fret about what the producers paid to hire the performers on screen. In baseball, that hand-wringing has become its own little pastime, and those who write the checks have taken cover in such foolishness. This really kind of caught my eye, because it is one of those things where the excuses that are going around are all about, like, luxury tax implications, and that this is a justifiable move on the Red Sox part. And we've seen this in other franchises where they've shed contracts to get under certain thresholds.
Yeah.
Or they've, like, shed so many contracts that they're, like, barely meeting the minimum threshold. And, you know, taking...
I mean, this happens with the Senators every single year with Eugene Melnyk.
Redistribution and, you know, something like the Pirates have done this in the past.
Well, I mean, and an even worse, an even, like, an added complication or an added little note to this, right, is that the Red Sox traded away the second best player in baseball and a serviceable good pitcher to duck the luxury tax and are raising ticket prices next year.
Yes.
They're raising ticket prices next year. They didn't make the playoffs this past year, but the year before that, with basically the same team, they had one of the most successful seasons in baseball history. 109 wins. And then
obviously
steamrolled through the playoffs.
They fired Dave Dombrowski, and then the new sort of
Chaim Bloom
management is like, oh, we gotta do this because of the, like, largesse of the previous administration. And people fail to point out, like, they won a World Series.
One of the most successful teams in baseball history.
Admittedly.
109 wins.
Very cloudy now, thanks to
correct.
The Alex Cora implications.
Sure.
But they... Dombrowski did what he was supposed to do.
Dombrowski always does what he's supposed to do. That man is successful everywhere he goes.
Put together a team that won games.
That man is successful everywhere he goes. He helped put together the 94 Expos, you know, which probably would have won a title had it not been for a strike. Mm-hmm. He put together the 97 and whatever 2003 Marlins. Twice he put together a winning team on a shoestring budget. He put together the mid 2010 Tigers. Which
competed,
and didn't they win one? No. They competed though, they and were, almost won.
Yeah.
And then he came to Boston and won.
And he did it.
Like,
and
this is a guy that's
like, oh, your moves are too expensive for me. I want to make money.
And if you look at it,
more money.
If you look at it, right? Like, there's only one contract I would say that is bad in hindsight, and that's the new Nathan Eovaldi one. And even then, you're paying a guy as a thank you for basically destroying the rest of his career and his elbow to win the Red Sox a championship. That was a thank you contract.
Yeah.
One thank you contract, and apparently that's too much for the Red Sox, and they have to ship out the second best player in baseball. Now, granted, this is all under the contingent that this actually still goes through, but it's ridiculous. It's in bad faith. It's deplorable. It's disgraceful. It's unethical.
So, Betts heading into free agency after this season, and
he said he wanted to hit free agency. But I guarantee you, if the Red Sox, instead of lowballing him three times over 2.5 years, if they came to him with something close to the Mike Trout contract or something close to the Gerrit Cole contract, Mookie Betts is putting pen to paper and signing.
Or the Harper or Machado deals. Something.
No, they offered him the Machado. They offered
him the Machado level?
They offered him the Machado deal. Because the last contract they offered him was 10 years, $300 million. The difference is that Mookie Betts is a far, far, far better player than Manny Machado. A far, far, far better player than Machado.
Right. Like, his WAR conversion, I think I read, was like $57 million a year.
$57 million a year. Obviously, nobody's going to make... What's Mike Trout making? I think it's $37.5 million a year.
Right.
But so if you went to Mookie and offered him $36, $37 million a year over 10 years, which
maybe
is well worth it, there's no way he turns that down. There's no way he doesn't sign that contract.
Right. So they have no intention of paying him.
They just don't
want
to
pay
him.
He's going to go into free agency, and the most they're going to get back is a draft pick and a compensatory draft pick. Is this better than that?
I don't even want to talk about that just because of how... I mean, like, yes, this is quote-unquote better than that in terms of the sports, but, like, just pay the man. You have the second-best player in the baseball. Like, I don't understand. Just pay him. Just pay him.
Is it... And this is, you know, I don't want to be like playing devil's advocate. Is it better for him to be shopped elsewhere and leave a place where that's the, like, culture? that they don't value it or they are not willing to, despite like the depth of the pockets and the history of the organization, that like,
I don't know. I guess it,
maybe
I guess
he
it,
ends up going somewhere where they are willing to pay him closer to what he's worth. And he gets out from under like that.
Maybe, but
really
it still doesn't
kind of toxic Boston.
It still doesn't
sports.
It still climate. Doesn't soften the blow of the fact that the third richest owner in sports right now is unwilling to pay the second best player in a particular sport. It is totally in bad faith, and it sets the precedent. If they're not willing to do it, then how many other owners down the line can look at that and basically go, well, if the Red Sox weren't willing to pay you that, then you're obviously not worth that amount of money.
I mean, we've talked about the championship belt that they hand around the owners for people kind of keeping the free agent prices down.
You know, and I'm fully expecting to be sitting here in this booth talking with you next February, being like, why hasn't anybody signed Mookie Betts yet? This is a guy that put up 9.5 wins above replacement on the Dodgers last year. This is the guy that is a AL MVP and last year's NL MVP. I'm fully expecting to be having that conversation with you and just being like, what is going on?
So we alluded to it. The one fly in the ointment is that once the Red Sox got a look at Bruce Ogrodowal's medical files, which are obviously only for the team employing him, they didn't have those beforehand.
Yeah.
There are some question marks, and conceivably this might kind of kibosh things. The Twins were willing to give up their top arm in part because, you know, this is a guy who has had some injury history.
Yeah.
His physique, I mean, he's a flamethrower, absolutely, and he's got 2++ pitches.
Right, the sinker and the fastball?
Fastball and sinker.
Yeah.
And he did come up to the majors last season briefly after his injury and showed a little bit of what he can do from the bullpen.
Yeah.
The question is he going to be like a future like closer or just like,
I think that's what Fangraphs seems to project him as.
And that's what the Twins, I think, were willing to part with because they have a fairly decent bullpen. I would say they were ranked fifth in the AL last season. They did do a little bit of tinkering with it in the offseason. And so if you don't project him as a starter, and there were three kind of top pitching prospects that conceivably could get those two back end rotation spots.
Right.
Then sure, especially because we've talked about the Josh Donaldson deal. The first 2 years are that's the window.
Well, I mean, like the positives to look at here are for literally everybody else other than the Red Sox, right?
I would say literally everybody but the Red Sox fans.
Yeah. Okay. Fair.
Because I don't think the organization has shown that they.
Well, I think the players are going to care, right? Because this is a team that, even though they missed the playoffs last year, was an historically great team the year before, mm-hmm. and they were very unlucky last year. They underperformed their Pythagorean by 8 wins, which would have been enough to get them in the wild card hunt. And who knows, you know, if you're playing a little bit better, you push a little bit harder, who knows, right? So like, this is a team that could have graded out to be a wild card team this year. You don't know. So this is bad for everybody other than the owners of the Red Sox. It's bad for the players too,
right?
This is great for the Dodgers. You get the second best player in baseball
on an already stacked team,
and a pretty good pitcher who can operate out of the bullpen for you come playoff time.
Yeah, and losing
David Price,
losing Maeda,
you're replacing him with Price, who I think is actually
an upgrade, a little bit better. Both of them have shown the willingness and a capability to move to the bullpen
if
they aren't a starter in those shortened postseason series.
And now Kenta Maeda becomes the second best starter on the Twins, maybe third, depending on how you feel about Odorizzi.
I would put Odorizzi above him just because of injury concerns.
Right. Kenta Maeda's. And it's not like you're really losing a lot with Graterol because you already have a pretty good bullpen. The collateral of this trade, too, is that the Dodgers, in order to free up some more space,
traded Jock Peterson
and Ross Stripling to the Los Angeles Angels for some prospects, which, again, makes the Angels a better team because now you can have an outfield of Mike Trout, Justin Upton, Jock Peterson, or you can move Peterson to first, because he's shown the propensity to be able to play there, and when you want to move Joe Adell up. And now you have Ross Stripling, who is probably now your ace, and your rotation looks, you know, better than it has in a lot of years.
I think you're going to at least compete in the AL West.
Yeah, I mean, the Astros are probably still the...
Yes.
Really, really good.
That is like a giant asterisk around like what we expect from them. First of all, brand new manager, Dusty Baker. What that climate, what that culture is going to be like. I mean, obviously, he's got a history as being kind of a steady hand on the wheel in some tumultuous clubhouses.
Not a great bullpen manager.
But yes, he has his own issues. Bullpen management being the primary one. And this is the Astros fan who like went through all of the tape and found all the instances of banging and then did, you know, batting average and a whole bunch of other statistical analysis of the instances of the banging on the garbage cans. There's some like wide discrepancies in terms of like how good a hitter these hitters are and whether we're going to, you know, see a decline in the offense. However, it is a very strong and capable young team. They've showed that they could do it without cheating. What this going to, I mean, because this has been the entire offseason for the Astros,
yeah,
right? It's been
upheaval.
They lose their manager. They lose the GM. They have a new manager. They don't know him. He's never been a part of this organization.
Right. And the Angels are poising themselves to strike, which is great. It's going to make that division a lot more competitive. The A's are still pretty good. We don't know what the heck's going to come out of Texas, but they're trying.
They're making moves.
The only thing we know is that the Mariners are going to be very bad.
Yes. And they're just going to feast on them. It's the Royals in the AL Central, right? Where like the White Sox and the Twins are just going to beat up on them and pad their winning stats. Ron Reinicke is reportedly going to be named the Red Sox manager. So we mentioned Alex Cora earlier, and of course he was fired by the Red Sox. They're apparently waiting to officially announce this, though, because the commissioner's office is still investigating the Red Sox 2018 sign-stealing allegations before they make an announcement. Reinicke serving as bench coach previously, and this came after some indication that they had interviewed John Gibbons and also had interviewed Dusty Baker prior to his signing with the Astros. It's going to be another, I mean, this guy's inheriting a really rough clubhouse too, coming on the heels of this investigation and especially on the heels of this Betts move. I have nothing but sympathy for Ron Reinicke inheriting this.
Apparently they also interviewed Gibby.
Mm-hmm, yeah, I did mention John Gibbons. I want to touch briefly on some other moves.
Sure.
One of them that it's funny because Tuesday afternoon I was reading a piece about it and I thought, oh, this is kind of an interesting one. And it was the signing of Yolis Chacin to a minor league deal by the Twins.
Smart move.
You know, a veteran guy who's shown some stuff and who could be a rehab candidate in terms of, you know, getting his stuff back together. And buys the squad innings in the Michael Pineda yet to return because he has 39 games left on his suspension, I believe it was.
Yeah. No, I think this is, I mean, the Twins.
And then Rich Hill, obviously recovering from injury, not expected back till June. This is a nice kind of, and again, like
very twinsies. Very twinsy move.
Very money ball move, right?
I mean, they went out there and they got Chacin, Hill, Bailey, Pineda, Odorizzi, and potentially Maeda to shore up what was not a great rotation last year. Those guys are all good. I'm not going to say great, but they're all good. And, you know, they kind of went all in on a run is a run, no matter what side of the equation it's on, right, by picking up Donaldson. So I think that they just plan on having enough guys to keep it low enough that they can just swat enough bombs to win every game.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, worked out for them last year.
It's the Houston Rockets, no D, all three.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the Houston Rockets. They're trying to be the Houston Rockets of Major League Baseball.
Which, I mean, come playoffs, I don't know, but certainly regular season.
I can tell you it's certainly more fun to watch than the Houston Rockets. The Houston Rockets are boring, but the Twins are fun. I can attest, the Twins are fun.
This is true. The other one, just it's still, of course, in the rumor stages, but we mentioned last week about Chris Bryant's losing his arbitration on service time.
Yeah.
Obviously unhappy.
Yeah, he's
with the result of this.
Not a great situation.
And not happy with his team.
I think, though, Anthony Rizzo, his best friend out in the Twins, is doing his best to calm him down. Because Rizzo went on he did the rounds of a couple of Chicago sports media outlets this past week and said, like, let's not trade Chris Bryant. He's one of our best players. He's a really good locker room presence. We shouldn't do this. So I think Rizzo is probably doing his best to cool the situation off. I expect Bryant to remain there this year, kind of. Yeah, I'm going to say that I expect Chris Bryant not to move anywhere this year.
The one that I thought was an interesting one is the Arenado for Bryant straight up swap that's been rumored. The Braves, of course, our former Jays GM Alex Anthopoulos
is
involved in and always seems to have his hand on the phone. Has a treasure trove of prospects, as Mark Feinstein called it on MLB.com. If he wants to make a trade, this could be something.
It honestly makes sense for them to do it.
They obviously missed out on Rendon as a free agent, and they lost Josh Donaldson.
The only way it doesn't make sense is if they really trust Austin Riley at third base.
That's a big question mark.
I agree it's a big question mark, but we also don't have the reports from that organization.
So you got Austin Riley and Johan Camargo. Neither of them. Like Chris Bryant
is a huge upgrade over both of those guys.
Leagues better.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And if you've got all these prospects and you've got, I mean, a fairly young squad, it's the same issue that the Astros had in terms of, like, guys blocking other guys and there being no particular pathway because, yeah, you know, someone like Correa is super young.
He's not
you've
going
got a great
anywhere.
Shortstop project prospect, fantastic for you, but he's not going to get called up.
Right.
So why not use him?
Consolidate, yeah.
As a trade chip. And do that. Like this is not an aging ball club where, like, you know, you got to hold on to your prospects because your window's about to close and your future's a big question mark. This is a team that has a good future and could use like an injection like a Chris Bryant and immediately probably
yeah.
be prohibitive favorite in the NL East despite playing against the defending World Series champions.
With the way that division is going to be, the Cubs could use Chris Bryant's services as well. I mean, maybe keep him. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. Have you seen Jessica Mendoza has resigned as a Met advisor and is no longer going to be on Sunday Night Baseball?
So she's done with both things.
She's going to remain on ESPN and will do some weekday games and some panel work.
Not Sunday Night Baseball.
Not Sunday Night Baseball. And she's not part of the Mets anymore either.
This is interesting because, of course, she went on, was it
Mike and Mike?
Mike and Mike, I think.
Yeah, and had a really, really awful take.
Awful take going after Mike Fiers for being a whistleblower.
Yeah.
And drew some serious heat for that. And also, it was funny because, of course, everyone knew she was on the ESPN Sunday Night Baseball broadcast, but I don't think everyone knew she was also on the payroll of the Mets at the same time. And when she went on, she like...
Yeah, pick one or the other. I don't
kind of put a target on her back, and then people are like, wait, how is she doing this, and how is this not a conflict of interest? And so then now she loses both.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit in some other stories. We're going to connect a couple of them here. Yasiel Puig rumored to have been doing a medical for the Rays right now. So them potentially looking to sign him, which I think is just a classic Rays move.
Mm-hmm.
And in other Rays news, a lot of the players have been starting to say that they would rather move to Montreal. I'll try and find the exact source for it. I saw it earlier today. But the Rays are still attempting to push forward with the whole... the Rays organization is attempting to push forward with the whole half and half sort of thing. Manfred himself has come out and said that the Montreal plan is the best way for Tampa Bay to keep the Rays. And there was a report earlier today that some players have said that they would rather move to Montreal because it is, quote-unquote, a more metropolitan city and that St. Petersburg is not a nice city to live in. Hmm. On top of that, there's another tweet here that says from the Tampa Bay Times, MLB Commissioner Manfred says there is significant receptivity among owners for the Rays' radical plans to play half their games in Montreal, and he doesn't think players' union concerns are insurmountable. So it's a shame that Zouk isn't here because
I know you would have fired. I would have had to play that music cue again to calm him down. We'll see as this develops because I feel like this is the Seattle's going to get an NBA team back league obfuscation move that has been pulled in the NBA for a couple decades now.
Right, but the difference is I don't think St. Pete's going to break. The mayor of St. Petersburg seems like he's going to go toe-to-toe with them, and they're going to play chicken. And when you play chicken like that, I think if you put an ultimatum eventually on the table saying, like, listen, like, give us a new stadium or we're going to leave, you got to be ready to leave.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get the Expos.
Well, we'll leave it there. We'll hand it over to Amy Goodman in Democracy Now! Thanks for tuning into the Bench Jockeys here on 101.5 UMFM.